Welcome to Cleveland Clinic Cardiac Consult, brought to you by the Seidel and Arnold Miller Family Heart, Vascular, and Thoracic Institute at Cleveland Clinic.
Good morning. I'm Walid Saliba, an electrophysiologist at the Cleveland Clinic, and I'm the director of the Atrial Fibrillation Center. I would like to welcome you to the Global EP Summit. Over the next 15 minutes, I will talk about the new clinical trials, the Pinnacle Flex study, as well as the option trial, which is currently ongoing. The PROTECT AFib and the PREVAIL studies showed that left atrial appendage occlusion using the Watchman device when compared to warfarin is associated with a significant reduction in disabling strokes, a significant reduction in mortality that is primarily driven by a reduction in major bleeding events. The totality of the data led to the approval of the Watchman device by the FDA in 2015. The next generation Watchman Flex device is designed to advance procedural performance and safety while expanding the treatable population of patients with non-valvular atrial fibrillation. The Watchman Flex device, which was recently approved by the FDA in July of this year, is a little bit different than his older brother. To start with, it is 20% shallower and comes with a larger size, and therefore it can tackle some of the challenging anatomies that we encountered with the older device, such as appendages that are shallow or have a fairly large ostia. In addition, the new frame has a greater number of struts, allowing more contact points for better seal. It has a closed distal end to minimize appendage trauma and allow advancement within the left atrial appendage. It has a dual row anchors to increase device engagement in the tissue and therefore better stability. It allows full recapture and repositioning of the device, therefore minimizing the use of extra devices. And also it has a reduced metal exposure and increased span of the fabric to minimize thrombogenicity. This has allowed to safely enter and maneuver within the left atrial appendage while providing safer and more effective seal. The Pinnacle study was designed to establish the safety and effectiveness of the Watchman Flex in patients with non-valvular atrial fibrillation to reduce the risk of stroke. It is a single-arm, prospective, non-randomized, US-only IDE study that evaluated the safety and effectiveness of the Watchman Flex device. It is important to note that DOAC was the only option for post-implant drug regimen, not warfarin, which was used in the PROTECT and the PREVAIL studies. The goal is non-inferiority to performance goal based on current generation Watchman, which is data derived from currently available Watchman trials. 400 patients at 29 US sites were enrolled, period. The enrollment was fairly rapid, period. And as you can see here, the post-procedural antithrombotic regimen included a DOAC plus aspirin for 45 days post-implant, followed by clopidogrel plus aspirin through 6 months, and then aspirin indefinitely. TEE was performed at 45 days and again at 1 year. The study endpoints included a primary safety and primary efficacy endpoint. The primary safety endpoint really looking at issues related to the procedure itself. So therefore, this includes any of the following occurring within 7 days following the procedure or until the time of discharge. These include all-cause death, ischemic stroke, systemic embolism, device or procedure-related events requiring open cardiac surgery or major endovascular intervention. The primary efficacy endpoint really looks at the adequacy of closure and seal of the device at 1 year. So the rate of effective left atrial appendage closure, defined as any peri-device flow less than 5 millimeter demonstrated by TEE at 12 months. And also there is a secondary efficacy endpoint, which is now being collected, which include the occurrence of ischemic stroke or systemic embolism at 24 months from the time of enrollment. These are the baseline demographics. As you can see, this is a high-risk patient population with a mean CHA2DS2VASc score of 4.2. 22% of them had prior history of stroke, and a third of these patients had a prior history of major bleeding or predisposition to bleeding. The implant was successful in almost 99% of the cases. Only 5 of the 400 were not implanted. On the average, 1.2 devices were required per case, which is lower than the prior older generation Watchman device. And the implant success is consistent, if not better, compared to the prior Watchman studies. The primary effectiveness endpoint, which is the rate of effective LAA closure at 1 year, was achieved in all patients, which is superior to the preset performance goal of 97%. Now, if you look at the detailed LAA closure assessment, a complete seal at 12 months was achieved in almost 90% of the patient, which is definitely better than what we had in PROTECT AF and PREVAIL, which was around 67% at 12 months follow-up. The primary safety endpoint, which is, as we mentioned, the occurrence of any one of these events between the time of implant and within 7 days following the procedure, occurred in only 2 patients, or 0.5%, which is significantly better compared to the preset performance goal of 4.2%. These 2 events include ischemic strokes in 2 patients. One patient had an ischemic stroke 1 day after an unsuccessful procedure with a new visual field deficit. The second patient had an ischemic stroke 2 days after the procedure and had minimal residual symptoms by the time of discharge. As we said, DOAC were used immediately after implant, mainly apixaban and rivaroxaban, which were used in 98% of the patients. Nearly all patients, 96%, were able to discontinue their oral anticoagulation at 45 days after the TEE showed that there is adequate closure of the left atrial appendage. 1% continued their anticoagulation because of inadequate seal. This is quite comparable, if not better, to the prior Watchman trials in terms of oral anticoagulation discontinuation rate. This is the 12-month adjudicated major clinical event. Again, this is not the 24-month secondary endpoint of stroke and thromboembolism. That data is currently being collected. As you can see, there were no hemorrhagic stroke. 2.6% had ischemic stroke. There were no device embolization. And there were 4 pericardial effusions that required percutaneous evacuation, not surgical, but only percutaneous evacuation. If you look at the timing of the pericardial effusion, one occurred very, very late at the time of an AFib ablation, but the other 3 occurred beyond the 7-day post-implant and before the 45 days TEE, kind of a delayed effusion and required pericardiocentesis for evacuation. If you look at the timing of the ischemic stroke and you take away the first 2 patients who had immediately post-procedural ischemic stroke, you can see that most of the ischemic strokes occurred beyond the 45 days post-TEE. Device-related thrombus occurred in 7 patients, or 1.8%, all of whom were on dual antiplatelet therapy or aspirin at the time of detection. 2 of these patients developed ischemic stroke or systemic embolism. So in summary, the PINNACLE FLEX study showed that the Watchman Flex, in combination with a 6-week post-procedure regimen of DOAC and low-dose aspirin, is associated with a low rate of safety events and a high rate of effective appendage closure. The Pinnacle Flex met the primary safety endpoint with 0.5% experiencing an event, met the primary effectiveness endpoint with 100% adequate closure, and follow-up is ongoing until all patients reach the 24-month window whereby the secondary effectiveness endpoints will be reported. Now I want to spend a few minutes talking about the ongoing OPTION clinical trial. The primary objective of the OPTION trial is to determine if left atrial appendage closure with the Watchman Flex device is a reasonable alternative to oral anticoagulation following catheter ablation for high-risk patients with non-valvular atrial fibrillation. What is the rationale for the OPTION trial? Well, we currently know that patients who undergo atrial fibrillation ablation, if they are at high risk of stroke based on their CHADS VASC risk, they have to continue oral anticoagulation. And the reasoning behind that is that AFib ablation is not a cure. AFib is not gone. Actually, you just have to look harder or longer and you might see some recurrence. The recurrences were more likely to be asymptomatic after an ablation compared to before the ablation. And there is a false sense of security that atrial fibrillation is gone after an ablation and therefore I can stop oral anticoagulation. And this happened in almost 20% of patients despite their high CHADS VASC score. Furthermore, we do not have any randomized clinical trial that evaluated the safety of discontinuation of oral anticoagulation in post-ablation patients. So the big question, can patients get off oral anticoagulation following a perceived successful ablation? Current guidelines dictate that or recommend that oral anticoagulation should be continued after ablation in patients at high risk of stroke based on their CHADS VASC score. And more importantly, we have to understand the model that there's a disconnect between atrial fibrillation event and the occurrence of stroke. And the old dictum that you have to have atrial fibrillation to have a stroke in the setting of a high CHADS VASC might not be totally true, because the concept of an atrial myopathy that predisposes to atrial fibrillation as well as concomitantly predisposes to stroke is now gaining more and more tractions, to the point that stroke and atrial fibrillation are two phenotypes of the same disease. The OPTION trial will enroll 1,600 patients in 130 global sites. These patients have non-valvular atrial fibrillation at high risk of stroke by virtue of a CHADS VASC score of greater than 2 in men, greater than 3 in women. And these patients either have undergone atrial fibrillation ablation recently or are planning to have an AFib ablation. These will be randomized to either AFib ablation plus oral anticoagulation, which is the standard of care and what we do currently, or AFib ablation together with the Watchman Flex device, followed by a short-term oral anticoagulation similar to the previous trial, but slightly different regimen. Now, the placement of the Watchman Flex can be either concomitant at the time of the ablation, or it can be sequential, which means 3 to 6 months following an ablation that was done prior, and now the patient is following up on his first visit post his ablation, and you can discuss with him the possibility of maybe enrolling in the study and getting off oral anticoagulation with a 50-50 chance. The medication regimen following device implantation include 3 months of DOAC plus aspirin. Again, this is DOAC, not warfarin. This is followed by 3 to 12 months aspirin alone. There's no Plavix involved here. And more than 12 months aspirin is recommended. The co-primary endpoints include death, stroke, and systemic embolization. And they are seeking the non-inferiority measure here. And the major non-procedural bleeding As I said, in the device arm, the implant can be done concomitant or sequential. Concomitant, meaning that the subject is consented prior to the ablation and the Watchman Flex device is actually implanted at the time of the ablation, right after the ablation. They occur on the same day. In the sequential, the ablation occurs prior to the consent. This is a patient who has had an ablation, but within 3 to 6 months from that ablation, the subject is randomized and the device is implanted if the subject is randomized to device implantation. And the idea of a combined AFib ablation and left atrial appendage occlusion is not new. There are several reports in the literature that actually showed that such an approach is highly successful, has low complications, and has resulted in a good seal of the Watchman device in the left atrial appendage. And we will hear about some of the benefits of a combined approach from Dr. Kanj later on. Most importantly, it is probably more efficient, lower cost. You're already in the left atrial append in the left atrium at the time of the ablation, so you're in the same zip code. You might as well put the Watchman device since you're there. It's definitely better accepted by patients. There are some issues about sizing and stability that you will hear about, but in our experience, this has not been an issue. To date, the enrollment is 505 out of 1600, as you can see, predominantly in North America. 40% of the patients were in the concomitant and 60% in the sequential group. Therefore, I would say 20% of the patients have had a combined Watchman and AFib ablation procedure. And if you look at the demographics just very quickly, similar to the previous trials of the Watchman, average age 70, 66% male, lower risk group with a CHA2DS2 VASC of 3.7 and the HASBLED of 1.3, which is not surprising because continuation of oral anticoagulation is a must for the study. And obviously, if the result of the option are positive, then this will provide a label expansion to include these high-risk patients who are undergoing AFib ablation. So these are the three major trials that involve the newer Watchman Flex device, the Pinnacle Flex that we've talked about, which is completed, the Option trial, which is ongoing, and we'll hear shortly after about the Champion AFib study that we are all excited about. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. We welcome your comments and feedback. Please contact us at heart@ccf.org. Like what you heard? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or listen at clevelandclinic.org/cardiacconsultpodcast.